Hi, my name is Sam Williams, and welcome to part one of episode number 88 of my sexy music podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. So first of all, I'd like to welcome all you to part one of episode number 88 of my sexy music podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. I am Sam Williams, and for those of you who are just now discovering this podcast either on the Apple Podcast app, or on Stitcher, or on iHeartRadio, or on Google Play Music, or on Spotify, and you're wondering, so what the heck is this? I'm going to give you a brief description of what the show is all about. Okay, so I'm Sam Williams, and I'm a 24-year-old songwriter slash producer, but I'm also a huge sexy music fan slash expert slash nerd. And each week with this podcast, I take one song by one artist from the 60s and put the show in two parts. First part, I talk about my opinion of the song and why I think it's so good or why I think it sucks, and do my own personal analysis on the arrangement of the song, which will include the chords, melody, and lyrics. And the second part, I dig deep into the history behind that track. In that part of the show, talk about who wrote the song, who produced it, what studio the song is recorded at, who was the artist on the song, and the history behind them, and the history behind the songwriter that wrote the song, and also who were the musicians on the track, whether that be the band members or the studio musicians that played on the song, and where the studio the song was recorded at, where that studio was located at, and the name of that studio, and the name the label the song was released on, where that label was located at, and the peak position the song made up originally in the Billboard Hot 100 chart, and the year month the song was released. All that is in the second part of this show. Moving on, let's get started in this week's song, shall we? Okay, so I was looking at some of the past episodes of my podcast, and I noticed that it's been a couple months since I've done a British Invasion artist for this podcast, and possibly even more than that. So I figured, you know what, it's time I should do another one for one of the classic British Invasion artists from back then, and pick one that has a connection with the biggest British Invasion band of all time, and that band would be the Beatles. And even if you're not familiar with this specific artist, I guarantee you, if you're a huge Beatles fan, you're going to love who I'm going to be covering this week and next week. But, you know, just in case you're a casual fan, you don't know too much about their history, then you're going to enjoy me talking about the history behind this artist in the next episode of this podcast. But first, let's dive in and talk about, let's analyze one of their songs, one of their biggest well-known hits, shall we? Because this could be one of the most saddest and emotional songs that I've done on my podcast yet. But it's one that, even though the lyrical situation of the song is a total drag, it's one that I know that you will more than likely will be able to relate to. Especially if you've been through a painful breakup, and if you have, this song should hit home for you in more ways than one. And the chords of the song perfectly set the mood for the song, even though it's in a major key. So, you know, just because it's in a major key doesn't mean it's a happy song. But anyways, this song came out in November 1964. It's by an artist named Peter and Gordon. It's called I Go to Pieces.
When I see her coming down the street, I get so shaky and I feel so weak. I tell my eyes look the other way, but they don't seem to hear a word I say. And I go to pieces and I wanna hide.
Wow. Now that is a heartbreaking ballad if I ever heard one myself. And today, but it's just so good, and it's just an amazing song. And in this week's episode, we're going to talk about what makes this song so great, so both musically and lyrically. But first, we got to talk about the song's music. Okay, so you would think with a song with lyrics like this would basically be in a minor key. But interestingly enough, this is one of those really cool examples of a song that's in a major key but still sounds pretty sad and melancholy. And I know what you're thinking, Sam, how does a song in a major key sound sad and depressing? Well, I'm going to explain that to you in just a second. Okay, the way the song sounds sad, even though it's in a major key, is that the song puts an extra emphasis on the minor chords in the song, even though it's in a major key. You see, in the verses, there's one minor chord and another chord which sounds like a hybrid between a major and a minor triad. and it's actually a major 7 chord, but this leads to the major 5 turnaround and makes the song sound very depressing, especially when they use that minor 3 chord. But specifically, that minor 3rd chord also makes it sound very melancholy. And in the choruses, when it goes back and forth between the 1 and the minor 6, then resolving to that minor 4 chord after the major 4 chord also makes the song sound very sad. But with all this going on, you're forgetting some of the subtle things that are happening with the arrangements in the song, and they give the listeners some delicious ear candy they can just chew on for days. For example, that gorgeous intro in the beginning where it sounds like an acoustic electric 12-string, playing this beautiful melody that comes in right before the song's chords kick in, the electric rhythm guitar and bass come in the very beginning of the song. I love that little melody that happens, once the song starts. And also, one of the guitar player is playing that very New York style counter rhythm on the upbeats. You know, that's a very New York thing to that's very New York, absolutely. And that really cool staccato neoclassical piano part in the choruses, that's also very like a New York thing. But notice those little guitar fills the acoustic guitar player plays throughout the song, specifically in the verses in the bridge. And there's something very interesting I want to point out to you in the bridge. A new chord is introduced, and that is the major 2 chord. And then all of a sudden, you have a new chord progression introduced before the song goes back to the song's 3rd and final verse, when the minor 2 chord is introduced in the song's turnaround after the minor 3 chord is brought in back in before the song's 3rd verse. So basically it does that thing where it goes like from minor 3 to A flat minor and then to A and then A flat then to A and then it keeps doing that, and then it basically does that that F sharp major, you know, that major 2 chord, and then it goes to the 5, the B, and then it goes to minor 3, then the 2, and then the 5, and then back to the song's 3rd verse. Also, the drummer does a really good job on this song as his drums sound larger than life on this track, almost thunderous in a way. You know, when he does these super cool fills in the choruses and that triplet fill in the bridge and towards the end of the bridge as well. Also, I wanted to take note the 2-part harmonies in the song, because notice how they each sing a different note for most lines of the song, but right before the bridge, they sing in unison, which is kind of cool because it gives the listener some really good change of pace with the vocal performance of the song when 90% of the song is sung in harmony, meaning 2 completely different notes being sung at the same time. You know, that's basically the way the song sounds like throughout the whole song. Also, the horns of the song are another incredible layer in the arrangement that makes this arrangement sound extremely dense, you know, because with those horns along, you know, with everything else happening in the song, it just makes it sound incredible. You know, because even when just to prove to you how dense the song sounds arrangement-wise, when you listen to that, to those verses, and you listen to all those different guitar parts happening at once, but they're all pretty much playing, you know, the same chords, essentially, but there's like 4 different layers of guitar parts, and then those drums come in, you know, with the little staccato piano thing, and then the horns. I mean, it's just, the song is just, whoever did the arrangement for the song obviously probably should have won a Grammy. Seriously, he just did an incredible job on it. But one thing I wanted to point out to this song is that unlike 90% of the songs of the British Invasion, like I said before, this particular song doesn't sound very British and more New York as far as instrumentation is concerned, because while most of the British and British groups from coming from around this exact same time frame of like late 64, early 65, or more going for a self-contained band setup, in which, be honest with you, they stole that from the 50s Rock and Rollers, but we'll talk about more about them in the next episode of this podcast. This was one of those tunes that, you know, had a humongous orchestra, which is basically industry standard for most of the New York productions of this exact same time frame. I mean, if you listen to most of the hit songs coming out of New York around this time, they all have horns and they all have strings and backup singers, and this is one of those songs that characterizes exactly that. So this was a really good example of the Brits taking a cue from the American producers and trying to copy that style and sound that was huge in America around this exact same time. I mean, they were listening to those New York records and seeing if they could incorporate a lot of those elements into, this specific sound they were going for for when they're recording their records. Moving on, let's dive into the song's lyrics, because 90% of the reason as to why the song is just so amazing is just how relatable and how heartbreaking these lyrics are. But first, let me ask you this question. Have you ever run into an ex-significant other and they ended your relationship with you so abruptly without any real explanation as to why they broke up with you? And you also can't even stand the sight of seeing them in public so much that it becomes that you become an emotional wreck every and any time that it happens? Well, trust me, if that has happened to you, then this song is definitely for you. You see, the singer in the song is so heartbroken and distraught of him seeing his ex-girlfriend that he wants to hide and run away from her, and he almost dies inside whenever it happens. And this guy is so taken in by his ex that his body parts want to reach out and touch her even when she isn't present with him. If this situation sounds dreadfully familiar to you, then this song is definitely for you, because I'm sure if you've been through this exact same situation yourself previously in your life, I'm sure the song will resonate with you on so many levels, because I'm sure that you can really feel for the guy in this song if you've been through this exact same situation he's been through. And even though the song is over 50 years old, you might be a millennial or a Gen Z guy or girl, and this song might speak to you in many ways, because You've probably been through this exact same situation of what he's going through. And trust me, this is a very emotional song, because he honestly wishes the relationship could have kept going, but when it ends so abruptly, he doesn't know how or why it happened, and all he is left with is emptiness and despair after it happens. And trust me, it's definitely not a good situation to be in. And again, it's the flip side to last song we talked about that was kind of a breakup song, because that one was more of like the guy wanted to happen. Like, he didn't want anything to do with this girl anymore and he initiated it. But in this kind of a song, it feels like the girl initiated this time, and things seemed to be doing good until she broke up with him. And then things kind of went towards a downward spiral after that. And while not everybody has been through it, the people that have gone through the specific situation in the song, I'm sure this one hits home for you in many ways. And also, one interesting thing that happens in the song when it gets to the bridge is that throughout the whole song, everything is told in the present moment. He's literally describing things as they're happening right now, in a sense, with the song. But when the singers get to the song's bridge, the song does a little flashback moment when he talks about a recollection he had when he remembers the exact moment when his girlfriend said farewell to him. And in this instance, when you listen to the song, it almost kind of feels like you're watching a movie when you have that flashback moment in the song from the past before cutting back to the present day for the third and final verse of the song. Because, you know, basically he talks about how he goes all places that they used to go to, but he knows that she'll never be there. And, you know, he feels so hurt by his ex, and he hopes that she's happy now that she did that to him, which is definitely not, as you can see, this is a pretty depressing song. But, you know, honestly, not all songs that are happy are, you know, relatable. I mean, there are some songs that are super sad, but are also super relatable as well. And, you know, just because you weren't there in the 60s when the song came out doesn't mean that you won't be able to relate to it either. Because, again, this could have happened in 2020, and it also could have happened in 1964 when the song was written. You know, so it's, and also the reason why that flashback moment is pretty interesting, because it's kind of rare, you know, for songs, especially back in the 60s, to switch perspectives or time frames within the lyrics of the song. Although it's always cool when you listen to a song and it incorporates that, because, you know, it feels like you're watching a movie, because you're hearing the introduction with the song and kind of getting used to the story of what's going on. And then essentially what happens is that once you kind of get to the song's bridge, that's when sort of a twist happens. That's when you're starting to find out more information about what happened in the past, and then that gives you a better understanding of where the singer of the song is coming from, or specifically the writer that wrote the song, when he kind of flashes back, you know, to that little thing that happened in the past and then brings it all back to the present day, you know, which is exactly what happens when the song cuts the bridge, and then it gets back into the song's third and final verse. And by the way, when the song flashes back to that moment when he talks about when he remembers the last time he saw his ex and what she said to him, things, all of this perspective, all of the song also switches from him talking to the girl. Like it goes from him, basically. What, and that's a very interesting part of the song too, because how many songs you can think of where things kind of switch from the guy talking to the girl talking to the girl talking to the guy talking? I mean, there aren't very many songs that kind of all of a sudden switch, like, who's what, the perspective of who the song is, where the song is coming from as far as the song's lyrics is concerned. But also, I'm not really sure exactly why he misses the girl so much, you know, after he says she hurt him so much. You know, I mean, I don't know why he all of a sudden wants to go back to her, but, you know, I think it might be time for him to move on to somebody else, you know, I mean, but he's just really having a hard time with that, because in the lyrics of the song, he says that, you know, his every single part of him wants to go back to her, even though that'll probably never happen, you know, and I'm sure that anybody that's been through a painful breakup will be able to, you know, relate to that feeling of desperately wanting to come go back to your ex, but knowing that's probably not going to happen. But yeah, so that concludes part one of episode number 88 of my 60 Music Podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. I'm Sam Williams, and if you found my analysis really cool and interesting of the song, and you've never heard the song before, and you're literally listening to the song for the first time, and you're around my age, you're a millennial, and you've got turned on the song because of me, you can email me at samltwilliaicloud.com. And you can also reach out to me on Instagram at iHeartOldies and check out more of my original music at samwilliamsmusic.net. Also, a couple of things that are in the description of this episode of this podcast. You can check out our link to this week's song, so that way you can listen to the whole thing. And two, you can also listen to my YouTube and Spotify playlist for this podcast. Here you'll be able to find all the songs I've covered on the show, including some of the ones I've done, talked about in some of the interview episodes I've done. You can find all those, and that all can be found in the link. All those two things can be found in the description of this episode of this podcast. Hopefully that'll give you some ideas as to what songs I should cover next on my show that I haven't yet. And if that does, you can email those to me at samltwilliaicloud.com. And another thing you can do is that you can also check out the official Redbubble merchandise store for this podcast. There you'll be able to find all of this really cool merchandise that Redbubble, thanks to them, they created for me. And it's just, and the logo that I personally came up with for the show that I had somebody else design is basically the name of the catchphrase I say at the end of every episode of my podcast, and keep on trucking to die font, with the name of my podcast in the bottom. So that's where you'll be able to find my logo and all these really cool merchandise items. I'd love it if you can purchase something from there, but if not, I at least like some feedback on the prices of each item in the store, and possibly and also feedback on the merch you know, itself, you know. So, but yeah, so thank you guys for listening to this episode of the podcast. I'm Sam Williams, and I'm the host of this really cool podcast. And by the way, just to remind you, this podcast is all about the education and preservation of 60 music to future generations. So if you're listening to this podcast and you're around my age, and you think this is a really cool show, and you have other people your age that love this podcast as well, please forward this podcast to all your friends that are, you know, in that millennial age group, you know, people in their late 20s or mid to late 20s that, you know, think that never heard this stuff before, and you think they would really like these songs, and you think that they'd want to listen to them, please forward this podcast to them. Tell them about it, you know, because I'd really appreciate that, because the more younger listeners they can get for this show, the better, you know, because really that's my goal. I want to make sure that 90% of the people listening to this podcast are people that in that millennial age group between late 20s, early 30s, or late teens, early 20s, around that sweet spot of people that probably may have never heard this stuff before and are just listening to it for the first time, if you know what I mean, and not necessarily the baby boomers who have heard these songs over a million times. I mean, I'm kind of like that because I grew up listening to this kind of music, so a lot of these songs I've heard over and over and over again, but I'm doing this podcast so that way I can teach people about it to people who may have literally heard these songs for the very first time through me, and they're just discovering this music now, and they're around my age, you know. So that's really what this podcast is all about. So anyways, I'm Sam Williams, and thank you again for listening to this podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. Till next week, please keep things real.